#1 sports site in the world.
Live from the Click and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg a down, smack a jackal.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
If we die, we die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio
is now. This is what we do.
From the Click and Loan studios, here's Tony D.
Well, the SEC is dealing with something that I really wished it wouldn't deal with, and that is the Nick Saban problem. And it is something that has been created by ADs around the SEC in judging the success or failures of their football teams on the success of Alabama and Nick Saban. It has led to a lot of boosters and a lot of fans being really, really anxious about where their programs are going. And we saw it in the firing of Mark Richt, where after 15 years and no national championships and just a few SEC titles, not many, but not enough, that it was time for Mark Richt to go. We also saw it at LSU, where LSU almost fired Les Miles, who's bringing in one of the top recruiting classes in the country in 2016, but yet the AD at LSU had to kind of think about whether or not he wanted to bring back Les Miles. Why? Is it failure on the football field? Well, it depends on how you look at it. Personally, Mark Richt and Les Miles are constantly winning 10 to 9 to 10, 11 games a year. Sometimes they play for a conference championship, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they play for a national title, and sometimes they don't. But they are consistently putting their team in these positions where a game or two here or there could really lead to some tremendous success. And the reason that these guys were in so much trouble was because fans now have an active voice. They have a voice in terms of getting on social media to reach out to ADs and let them know exactly how they feel. And because they overreact, because fans overreact, there is a sense that ADs lean towards these guys, these fans that have got some powerful influences on the school through the donations and boosters and whatnot. It's not a very good situation for the league to be in, for the conference to be in. I know this goes on all over the place, but I'm going to settle in on the SEC because it's directly related to how schools view Alabama's success. And Alabama has had tremendous amounts of success. When you think about where Alabama's been since Nick Saban's got there, not only the national championships, but the fighting for the national championships and all of those things, it is remarkable. And it is unfair to put a coach that's coming into that conference under those same kind of scrutiny. And yet, they're going to do it time and time again. If I was an athletic director, I would stop listening to people on Twitter. Now, you would think like, well, you know, we're the ones that pay the salaries. We buy the tickets. We have a voice. No, you don't have a voice. You don't get to say when a coach gets fired. And no matter how much you donate to a school, you shouldn't be listening to those people. I know. We're talking millions of dollars, a lot to lose. Where are they going to go? Where are they going to go? You think the biggest Alabama fan is going to start giving his money to Auburn? You think that biggest Alabama fan is going to just keep his money at home? No. Do you know why? You know why they're not going to do that? Because even in the darkest times, even in times where you're not competing for a national championship, those kind of people can't stay away from the program. I've seen these people time and time and time and time again in my time covering college football. They're everywhere. They can't stay away. You know, it's like that character, the buddy who owned the car dealership on Friday Night Lights. In the end, he couldn't get away from the Dillon Panthers if he wanted to. It's the same with these guys, these boosters. They're not going anywhere. And you give them a voice when you listen to their voice. And if you're an athletic director, you're going to start questioning your coach because of Twitter? Because of Facebook messages or whatever? I mean, it's crazy. And if you start listening to the mob, then you're going to start thinking like the mob if you don't have a backbone. And listen, no athletic director wants to ever go up to the president of the school and tell them that Billy Bob, the car dealer, is not donating enough money. Nobody wants to do that. So you start thinking. And it's and here's the problem. It's not a direct link. And let me tell you, if I'm painting that picture, I'm sorry. A booster doesn't tell an AD to fire a coach and the AD fires the coach. It's not that. It's that if the AD spends so much time watching social media and getting on Twitter and seeing the anger that's getting directed because of a bad loss, et cetera, then he starts thinking like those people. Then he starts thinking in terms of those people. And he doesn't want to make the mob bigger. So when the team loses, let's say, to Tennessee at home, and then the next week they struggle against Vanderbilt, and then Kentucky beats them, all of a sudden those are terrible losses. Well, the mob gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And as an athletic director, one of the things you don't want to do is let the mob get out of control. So there are the rumors, and then you hear them all the time. So-and-so's on the hot seat. So-and-so's on the hot seat. You know where those reporters get that? It's because those athletic directors leak that kind of stuff or make sure they know that kind of stuff. It's to calm the mob. Well, why? Because everybody is pointing to Saban. And everybody wants to be Alabama. And you can't be Alabama because you don't have Saban. He recruits better than anybody. He coaches better than anybody. His system or his the way he runs that team and the way they follow his lead is different than most coaches across the country. Listen, I'll tell you a story. Remember when Alabama played Notre Dame and they were throttling Notre Dame in the national championship? Remember that? It was A.J. McCarron's game and whatnot. And he was brilliant the whole game. And towards the end, Barrett Jones was his center. And there was a scuffle between the two. They got in an argument, almost a shoving match. They were so into each other's face. This was late in the game when Alabama was just finishing it out and ending it. But Barrett Jones apparently did something wrong. Didn't believe he did something wrong. His quarterback got on his case about it. He defended it. And it looked ridiculous on television, right? It looked ridiculous, those two going at it in a blowout national championship game with just a few minutes left on the clock. Well, I had an opportunity about a year later, a little less than a year later, to ask Eli Gold about that, who is the voice of the Alabama Crimson Tide. And I asked him about that, and I said, you are around this team all the time, and you hear about the system, you hear about the process. You hear about the way Saban gets these kids to do it one way and one way only. And that's it. His way. But if you follow this process, you'll be successful. So I said, Eli, when you see Barrett Jones and A.J. McCarron yelling at each other on the field with a few minutes to go in a blowout national championship game, do you get that when everybody else in America is going, what are these kids doing? And he said, absolutely. When you're around this program, you understand that AJ and Barrett were both going through the process in the way they know it. And they were both basically arguing about what the right process was. That's Nick Saban. That's something other coaches don't do necessarily. And now I got SEC schools listening to crazy boosters who've got a bunch of money, who think that they have power and influence, because they do, making decisions on good coaches like Mark Richt and Les Miles. And let me say this. With Mark Richt, you don't even have to tell me a booster is behind it. I get why Georgia finally went, hey, it's 15 years, it's enough, it's stale, it's run its course, it's fine. But with Les Miles, there is nobody better equipped to handle the number one recruiting class, or what appears to be the number one recruiting class. We'll wait till February. Appears to be the number one recruiting class, better than Les Miles. And they almost let him go. And they almost released him for an unknown because people in Baton Rouge couldn't mentally handle it, that they're not successful like Saban. and an athletic director that just followed along with the mob until he finally had to calm it down. And the good news is that there were smart people in Baton Rouge, smart people that decided that the mob on Twitter needed to be drowned out. And that's why Les Miles got to keep his job. Because enough smart people in Baton Rouge said, that's crazy. You're all nuts. Because we could send this program back to the dark ages if we get the wrong guy. And right now, we're a win or two away from winning the division and possibly the conference. Keep the guy that's got us there. Boosters have always been influenced, but they've hardly had voices. Now with social media, they've got massive voices, and it's killing this process. It really is. Listen, I get lunatic like with my school too. But let me tell you what, I would go crazy if after every loss I wanted to fire everybody in the coaching staff. It's enough to give you a headache. All right, 800-777-2907. You want to get involved in conversation? We've been talking Kobe tonight, Peyton Manning and Brock Osweiler in Denver. But coming up next, USC, staying with this theme of hiring and firing college coaches, USC has made its hire. It's Clay Helton, who has been the interim coach. Did Pat Hayden make the right decision? I'll tell you why next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on.
Back to
him.
Back to the Quick and Loan Studios.
And back to Tony D.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us. You can follow us on Twitter at Tony D Radio. If you'd like to ask us a question or comment or tell us we're ridiculous. Tell me I'm ridiculous. Adam never gets told he's ridiculous. You're like the smarter one on the show.
I get calls like during the breaks or that just don't go through. I've had people call me and just be like, what are you talking about?
You can also,
the best is when I get the calls and they're just like, tell the producer he doesn't know what he's talking about, thinking that
that's the best.
You know, so they don't think they're talking to me. They think they're talking to someone else.
Yeah. When I worked at my first on-air show gig was in Colorado Springs. And I was my own everything. I answered the phone during, mm-hmm. like, if the phone. So what I do is I told people, I was like, I don't have a call screener. I run my own board. If you're calling, I'm going to put you on the air straight up. Like, I'm not, you know, that's the way it has to be until we finally got a staff. And during the breaks, if I saw you call during a break, I got that all the time. People thought they were talking to a producer, even right. though I was on the air telling people I'm the only one in the room. They didn't think they were talking to me. They're like, that guy is an idiot. Tell him the Broncos, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, all right, I'll make sure I tell him he's been drinking half the day. I mean, he's just, I don't know how he gets into work in the morning. So that's basic. Yeah. That's always fun to take those kind of calls. So I also like us on Facebook, Tony D Radio Show. Like us there. You can catch up with what we're doing with the show, and every now and then we throw some pretty good articles up there. So just, yeah, like us on Facebook. Let us know. 800-777-2907. All right, so Clay Helton got the job. Am I reading this correctly?
Yes,
that
he did.
Clay Helton got the job. He was the interim coach at USC. He went 5-1 during his stretch. So Pat Hayden said, you're the guy. And there's this video going viral of the team going crazy in excitement that he got the job. And it's kind of heartwarming because that's kind of what you want to see with kids in college, right? The guy we like, the guy we're playing hard for is getting the gig. And they had already gone through this once with Ed Orgeron, and he didn't get the job. They gave it to Steve Sarkisian, and now Clay Helton getting the job after taking over when they got rid of Sark, and this is where Pat Hayden's heading. So here's the problem, though. A couple of things about this hire. First of all, before I get into the problems, let me say this. I like it. I'm going to tell you why in a little bit, but here's the problem that people are having with it. One, if you're USC, first of all, there are very few places in college football that can have their pick of anybody they want. USC is one of them. People will leave the NFL to go to USC if you're not successful in that league. You would leave any other job with most teams to go coach at Southern Cal. I remember having to calm people at Tennessee down when Lane Kiffin left to coach USC. It's hard to believe your school is inferior to another school and as far as a destination. Tennessee's got the Vol Walk. It's on the river. Neyland Stadium is as electric as it gets. They play in the SEC. If you get them good, there is no better place than Knoxville except USC. USC is one of those jobs that you take no matter where you are. Very few, Notre Dame, Alabama, maybe Texas, very few other jobs would make you not want to take the USC job, but they're very, very few. So if you're going to make this hire, Pat Hayden, you better make sure that Clay Helton is your right guy, because you could have anybody. And sometimes when a guy takes over on an interim basis, that doesn't mean that in the end he recruits well and has the from the day, you know, starts it all up and runs camp correctly and all those other things. He just may be catching a wave of a talented team that just needed its ship straightened out, and that's what he was able to do. But once it's your, once you're the captain, it's completely different. But I like this hire because I think Pat Hayden really needed to make it. Pat Hayden needed to make a hire that genuinely people feel good about. And then he's not rolling the dice with anybody. He didn't want Ed Orgeron. He wanted Steve Sarkisian. He wanted Sark because he knew the kind of person that Sark was in terms of being an offensive coordinator and a USC guy and all of those things. And maybe he was willing to overlook a few stories that have been bouncing around. But he wanted Sarkisian because he wanted to give the people a feel-good hire. It didn't work out. He wanted Lane Kiffin for the exact same reason. He could have gone out there and tried to convince Chip Kelly to leave the NFL for USC. He could have tried to go out there and get anybody else that's floating around. Mark Richt is now available. Hello? But instead, he went with the guy the kids love. He went with the guy that's giving them wins. And importantly, beat Jim Moore at UCLA. That's a big, big, big deal. So I like this hire because Pat Hayden needs a hire. The Lane Kiffin disaster and the Steve Sarkisian disaster is enough to make people question whether Pat Hayden's the right guy to lead USC. But he's got a coach now. People like, the alumni like, the players like. It may not be the big splashy name. It may not be Mark Richt. It may not be Chip Kelly. Who knows? But it doesn't have to be right now for USC. The guy that's winning games, the guy that got you the win over USC, the guy that got you in the Pac-12 championship game and could help you win a Pac-12 championship, even though it doesn't include a berth, is the guy you hire. Ed Orgeron, I thought, should have gotten the job, but I totally understood why he didn't. Clay Helton is a good coach. He's got that team rolling along. He had to take over one other time when Lane Kiffin was fired. He will take over again, and now that he's the guy, it's the right hire for USC, even if it doesn't splash on the marquee. It's Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Bottom of the next hour, we're going to have Renaud Notaro from Mile High Sports Radio, an interview we did earlier tonight, talking about the Denver Broncos and Brock Osweiler. If you missed that earlier, let me reset something I've been trying to deal with, and maybe you can help me out a little bit. 800-777-2907. I'm trying to find out, basically, the prognosis of Peyton Manning. What exactly is he out for? Foot injury and age? Just the foot injury? Combination of both? Because here's the way I'm looking at the Denver Broncos. People think it's just, well, yeah, Brock Osweiler is playing well. Peyton Manning's not getting his job back. I've seen it everywhere. But I'm trying to throw a little wrinkle. If you know me, I'm a little bit of a troublemaker here. Here's what I'm trying to think. If Peyton Manning struggled all year, and it was because of an injury, he has this injury that he'd been fighting all year, and it was never quite right, and that's one of the reasons he couldn't plant his foot properly and all those things, then his performance is injury-based and not age-based. If it's injury-based, injuries can heal, depending on how you come back from them, but injuries can heal. So let's say you're the Denver Broncos, and the only reason Peyton Manning is throwing all these interceptions but still managed to win games and not look good doing it is because he was hurt. Okay? Brock Osweiler's winning a few games, learning as he goes, learning not to take some sacks, still making a few mistakes, but in the end, that defense is allowed to do some things. They're running the ball a little bit better. The Kubiak offense is rolling. And remember, Kubiak's offense, he was the offensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos with John Elway in the latter parts of his years, getting him those two Super Bowls. So the system kind of works at times. I mean, I know people in Houston saw the good and the bad of it. So the offense is running smooth. Manning is healed. It's late December. Manning is healed. Do you bench Peyton Manning? Do you tell him he's lost his job? Well, I know the initial reaction on all of the media that watched Sunday night's game is, of course. And you know what? I can't disagree with that. I think it's time the Broncos turn the page on a $15 million 40-year-old quarterback and give the reins to Brock Osweiler. However, if Manning's problems are just injury-based, then he can be, albeit a little bit less because of the age, Hall of Fame quarterback. So now you are a team that has a healthy Peyton Manning. Now remember, we're not going to talk age yet. Let's do that a little bit later. You've got a healthy Peyton Manning. The foot's fine. He can plant. He can fire. He can do everything that he used to be able to do before the injury. Are the Denver Broncos really willing to give the reins of a Super Bowl caliber team to a first-year starter? Not first-year player, first-year starter. Right? Guy starting for the first time. Two games. Been in the league four, but just getting a few starts. And trusting that guy, that young kid who's working his way through the ups and downs of playing the position, is capable of winning you a Super Bowl. Now, we've seen backups win Super Bowls before. Trent Dilfer wasn't the starting quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens in the 2000 season. They had a few guys. When Dilfer took over, he led an anemic offense, but nevertheless, an offense for the Ravens that helped them win the Super Bowl. Jeff Hostetler is probably the most famous backup that had to take over for Phil Sims in a giant season where I think they started 11-0 that year. And Hostetler had to take over when Sims got hurt, and he led them, and he led that offense. It was a team that led by a strong defense to a Super Bowl. So we've seen this before, but I just can't imagine. I can't imagine that conversation. If you have 100% healthy Peyton Manning and you're going to bench him in a playoff run for Brock Osweiler, who is playing well, yes, but he's not Peyton Manning at his healthiest. Now, on the flip side, if it's age, if the reason Peyton Manning is struggling is not so much the injured foot, although that's a factor, but it's also a body that is worn down. Neck surgeries, right? Just being 39 years old. Bumps and bruises that never quite heal. Okay. Now you've got a case. Because time, as we know from all sorts of athletes, time is something no athlete can overcome. When the body starts deteriorating, there's nothing you can do about it. There's no reversible treatment to this. You can heal from wounds, but you can't get back time. If that's the case, then the Broncos have every reason to sit him down and say no. Because what you're doing out on the field, what you're the player you're becoming because of your age is not what we need to win a Super Bowl. Is not the quarterback we need to win a championship. But the healthy Peyton Manning, the one that shows no sign of complete debilitation of age, that's a different quarterback. And I don't know if he exists anymore. But if he does exist, then the Broncos are making a very, very bold statement that the scheme of Kubiak's offense is more important than a Hall of Fame quarterback on your roster who's healthy. Now, the key word to that is healthy. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying here, because I know many of you are just going to jump to the, well, he's 39 years old card. I'm not saying that. I'm saying healthy Manning, you're still giving out to the scheme. The scheme has to be run. Has to be run. And it has to be run by a guy that runs it better than your Hall of Fame quarterback. So the scheme is most important. It's being run properly by Brock Osweiler. Therefore, Osweiler is a better alternative than even a healthy Peyton Manning. The old Manning, we've already established, he's out. That's a pretty bold statement to make for a guy you're paying $15 million a year to. That is a bold statement to make. When you are trying to push for a Super Bowl, when you certainly have a defense that's capable of winning a Super Bowl. I mean, come on, we've all seen this play act. Come on, haven't we? Guy gets his shot, right? He takes over. He does really well. Inevitably, there's going to be the bad game. Inevitably, there's going to be the team that watches the film and breaks a guy down and knows what you're doing before you know what you're doing. All the quarterbacks have had it. You know, people forget Tom Brady won a Super Bowl his first year taking over for Drew Bledsoe. The next year, he didn't make the playoffs. And there was a moment where people thought, well, maybe the sun is setting on a good little story of the backup that made good. And then, of course, off he went winning more Super Bowls and running a dynasty, but that's a secondary story. I think Osweiler is going to be a great quarterback for the Broncos. I think he'll be fine. I think he's going to be good. But I'm just throwing out the reality that this team is going to choose him over a possibly healthy Peyton Manning. And that doesn't feel right, but it does make sense. If I'm Gary Kubiak, why would I give up my scheme? Why would I give up my offensive philosophy? Why would I give up an offense that I know I can make work? Why would I give that up? You can say all you want. Well, Manning's Manning. Yeah, sure. But I didn't get hired here to babysit a Hall of Fame quarterback and make sure he's happy. I came in here to change some stuff around, and I'm changing the offense of this team. I got Wade Phillips here. He's building a great defense, but I am changing the offensive identity of the team. That's why I was hired. That's why Elway brought me here, and I'm going to do it. And if it means that a certain Hall of Fame quarterback has to adjust, then he's better adjust. But right now it's being run better by a 25-year-old. So they're going to have that conversation, unless, of course, he never heals properly. And that's a possibility, too. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907, if you had thoughts on that. Tonight I watched the Charlie Brown Christmas special. Gathered the family. We're getting into the holiday spirit. December 1st, 25 days to Christmas, settling in. I'm watching Charlie Brown Christmas, and every year I say the same thing. And you know what that is, Adam?
What's that?
These kids are cruel. The Charlie Brown children are the cruelest children in cartoons.
They really are.
I mean, well, let me put it this way. Old cartoons, all right? The newer cartoons I can't speak for. At least the cartoons I grew up in. They are some evil children. They are genuinely mean to him. And he's just chugging along, trying to do the right thing. He gets that tree, and he brings it to that pageant, and they are ready to kill him. Every one of them. And they're yelling at him. And I mean, Charles Schulz, if somebody's written a paper on Peanuts and Charles Schulz, because I'm sure there's a lot of psychological angles to what he's trying to pull here. Charles Schulz either had a terrible childhood and was just putting his pain through the cartoon, or he's speaking volumes about kids and how we treat children and how children treat each other and all that other stuff. Because every year I watch it and go, God, these kids are awful to this kid. Awful. But it's still a classic. It's still cool. I like the, listen, I'm old, man. I've been around a while. I still dig the claymation 1970s, 1960s claymation Rudolph and stuff like that. I watch them every single year.
Yeah, my daughter loves them.
Loves them. They've been around for 50 years. And that was back in the day. No CGI, no computer animation. They put together a clay Rudolph and then moved it an inch and took a picture and then moved it a little bit more and took a picture and then kept doing that until they had a scene. It took them years. I love them. I watch them all the time. I love them. Now, my wife gets too into the holiday spirit. The house is completely ripped, decorated, stripped down, redecorated. There are knickknacks every single place. She tapes every one of the Christmas specials. She insists every year that we all gather around with hot chocolate and watch Polar Express. That's her thing. We can't say no. That's just the way it goes. And I'm out for it. But after a while, I go, oh gosh, I can only take so many Christmas carols. I can only hear the same things over and over again. But those Rankin Bass 1960s claymation specials, Heat Miser, Cold Miser, Rudolph, all that's, I love them. I watch them every year. I totally dig them. Wait, and Charlie Brown Christmas, I love.
Isn't this Christmas all about the new Star Wars? That's all I keep seeing.
I can't turn
it on without seeing it.
Now, hold on one second. Yes, you're absolutely right. I took my kids to go see the Hunger Games on Saturday, and they had the Star Wars preview on the screen, and it was great. And I said to my brother, I said, that's coming in like 2 weeks. And he goes, I know, I can't wait. And all I kept thinking about was you. Can't share in this kind of joy. Oh, Adam. And there's going to be those marathons, you know?
Right.
Yeah, all six movies, come watch all six movies before the premiere, stay for 42 hours or whatever it costs, however long it takes. I guess six movies would probably be, I don't know, 15 hours. Stick around and then you can watch the yeah, and I'm not doing that. But at the same time, you must be like, I don't know why these people are losing their minds over this flick.
I went to do a little Christmas shopping this past weekend. And, you know, looking for my daughter, and all I see is Star Wars toys. I don't know what this is. I don't know what this is. Can you just tell me where the regular toys are?
Let me tell you what, man. That's all I got when I was a kid. I mean, Christmas, I got TIE fighters and X-Wing fighters and the action figures. I mean, that's all I got for Christmas. The Ewok village, the Death Star. And you know what I did with them? After a while, they all got thrown away. And now they're collector's items. People are dying to get their hands on these things. If I had only known. Plus, I would have kept them in the box. It was stupid. I would have been dumb.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have played with them. I'd be like, no, I'm going to save these for when I'm 45 and I sell them on eBay. What's eBay? I don't know. It's going to be some place where you can sell your junk. I mean, like, you know, regular stuff. 800-777-2907. Your thoughts coming up next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Whether you get into a...
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him.
Back to the Quicken Loans Studios.
And back to Tony D.
So remember how I said earlier tonight that these schools that, you know, give in to these screams that coaches should be fired, how they better be careful? I'll give you a perfect example. So Mark Richt gets fired at Georgia. Atlanta Journal-Constitution starts listing the people that Georgia's going to be interested in to go pursue. Top on the list is former Bulldog safety, Alabama defensive coordinator Kirby Smart. What's the knock on Kirby Smart? Well, he's never been a head coach in the SEC before. Can we really trust him to take an elite unit to where it needs to go? Oh, no, 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 no. You don't get to play that game. No, 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 no. You just got rid of a guy that was more than qualified to do that job. No, no, no. Now you're worried that you won't get the right guy? Yeah, this is the problem. Now you're, oh, well, I don't know. I don't know about him. Or somebody else's failure, like taking a coach like that you know, had gotten fired or proved that he couldn't coach, like, I don't know, Will Muschamp, who Adam told me today, showed me a tweet today that South Carolina is interested in Will Muschamp. Oh, good Lord. But again, no, no, no. You don't get to play. This is the life you chose. You wanted to fire your coach to get a better guy. Go find the better guy. You had one. And you know what? That baloney about it being mutual, What guy gives up a gig? Unless he absolutely wants to go to another gig. I totally believe Mark Richt when he said, no, I wanted to stay. Of course he wanted to stay. He's making a boatload of money. He's in the SEC. He's got an elite team. Come on. He's like, doesn't want to go anywhere. But this is what I'm talking about. You could end up with a guy that you're not sure of, that you're just not quite sure of. You can be all excited, right? Get Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart might be a great coach. Kirby Smart might be the next Urban Meyer. Who knows? But there will be a level of, I'm not sure. I don't know. What if he's not that good? And that's the life you chose, not anybody else. You had a guy that was going to give you 9 to 10 wins every year. And if the cards were dealt correctly, could possibly win you a conference title. And you decided, nah, that's enough. 15 years is enough. And believe me, I'm not on the Mark Richt train. Because to me, Mark Richt lost too many games that the Georgia should have won. But I'm just saying, this is the dangerous part. Because let me tell you this. Boosters don't know anything. They just love their team. And if you're an athletic director, let me make your job very, very clear, according to a booster. Your job is to make them love your team as much as possible. That's your job. They want an athletic director that allows them to love their school as much as they possibly can. So, if it means getting them a new coach, you get them a new coach. If it means getting them another good coach, you go get them another good coach. You sit with any booster and ask them really who they want, they'll all come up with a million ideas, but they'll never settle on one. All they want is change. All they want is optimism. That's all they want. Because they want to feel good about their school. It's a crazy world. I can't imagine being an athletic director. I think if I was an athletic director major school, I'd lose my mind. Remember, I hate bringing up Friday Night Lights, but it's so perfect. The movie with Billy Bob Thornton, there was a TV show and then there was the movie. Remember in the movie with Billy Bob Thornton, he's at the high school. And the two guys come in and they're like, we have some new ideas about the offense. And he's got to listen to them. Can you imagine at Georgia what that's like? Hey, Mr. McGarrity, let me talk to you for a second. I got a bunch of ideas about what we should be doing. Oh, you do? Do you? Yeah. Why don't we go into your office and let me share them? Well, I have a meeting I guess we'll go into the office. Ugh, what a horrible existence. Ugh. And that's the life you chose. That's what you're going to get. I, to be honest with you, it makes my life a lot easier. As a fan of a team in that division, it makes my life easier if Georgia screws this one up. And I kind of hope they do. I hope they get buried. I hope they get Mike Riley buried at Nebraska. You know, I don't know if many of you know this. Nebraska used to be relevant. I don't know if you know that. Boy, Nebraska used to be really relevant. I hope Georgia suffers the same fate, at least for a couple of years. Tell everybody to go disappear for a while. 800-777-2907. Again, Renaud Notaro will join us coming up. We had a chance to catch up with him earlier to talk about the quarterback situation in Denver, the excitement of Brock Osweiler, the 2-game win streak, the fact that the Broncos are looking good. System and all. And we'll talk about Kobe Bryant and the retirement, how he did it. That's all coming up next hour. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.